shed my skin, and in the blink of an eye, I could fly, fly, fly. Tie my dreams up in a sack and lay my head down on the track and die, die, die. My life's been so sweet I just can't stand it. I must admit I've made out like a bandit.
So I'm going to start with all my questions. I'm so excited to just shoot the crap with you. I guess you could say crap. How long have you been doing either stand-up or comedy? How long have you been getting paid to have fun?
Getting paid?
Yes.
Well, I didn't get paid at first. I used to pay people.
Seriously?
Yeah. I was going to the University of Massachusetts. I had graduated from college already. My wife, then my girlfriend, was at the University of Massachusetts, so I went out there and got my teaching degree. And when I was out there, I started working at a little open mic night on campus that if you were the funniest act voted by the audience, you got passes to this restaurant that was associated with this little room on campus. So Gene and I used to go because we didn't have any money.
Work for a restaurant?
Well, and then I always wanted to stand up. I didn't know how to start, and that's how I started. And then I used to go to clubs in that area, like at happy hours and stuff, and I'd give the manager $5 or $10 to go up on stage during the break and say, if I'm funny, you give me my money back. If not, you can keep the money. Because that's the only way I could get on stage.
So
never got the money back.
Never. So people say, I've always wanted to do this, I've always wanted to do that. And you said you've always wanted to do stand-up. Were you a teenager? Were you a little kid who used to be the ham at the dinner table?
Yeah. I mean, I was not a good student. I wasn't a good athlete. I was funny. And I don't know why I was funny, but I always could find the funny and stuff. So from the time I was probably, you know what I wanted to be, actually? I wanted to be a disc jockey. So badly.
Are you glad that?
Well, I'll tell you what happened. My 1 year for Christmas, my parents bought me a turntable and a microphone so I could practice. And I love music. I wanted to be a disc jockey. And then I got a job at this tiny little radio station in Massachusetts, Taunton, Massachusetts.
Taunton.
The Silver City. Where,
as it were.
Well, yeah, I don't know if you know Silver, but Reed and Barton Silver Maker.
Oh, okay.
They're located in Taunton.
So Taunton.
So I was the account executive, and I had a weekend shift, and I hated it. I was alone in a room by myself talking to nobody.
Yeah.
But I still, you know, I still love music. And so then I just started, I don't know, I was teaching school.
And what a great thing to have a teacher with a sense of humor. Was that
a lot of teachers, a lot of stand-ups are former teachers. Bill Cosby, that worked out well for him.
Right.
Robert Klein was a teacher. A lot of guys you don't know that I started with were teachers. So, yeah, I mean, it's the same kind of thing. You stand up in front of a group of people and you have to occupy their attention. You have to get them to pay attention for a specific amount of time.
So in the mid-80s, I was on a radio station in San Francisco called Live 105, where I feel like you might have even been
there.
When I moved up here, I was his traffic reporter, the Live 105 Black Shadow.
Oh, wow.
Yes, as Kathy Labarsky. And
that was you?
That was me.
Why,
is this
why
bizarre?
Were you Kathy Labarsky?
Because that was my real... I got thrown into the traffic reporter, either quit or wasn't around, and I didn't have a radio name, so that was my real name. And
cool.
When I came up here, my husband said, I'm really tired of being Chris Labarsky. Can you be something Madru? Sure. But, so we can really talk about this. You don't fit the mold of a lot of comics at that time, and I'm talking Dana Carvey, Rob Schneider, Monty Python,
Jeremy Kramer, Bob Goldthwait. Kevin Meaney, Goldthwait.
Yeah.
I just saw Goldthwait last weekend, actually.
And he's so different.
Yeah, he's one of my best buddies. We had a really good friend who passed away, and there was a memorial for him last week in his hometown in upstate New York. So I saw Bobby Goldthwait. I saw Tom Kenny, who's SpongeBob,
who called our house and floored my daughter as SpongeBob when she was little.
Louis C.K. was there, Dave Cross, a lot of guys who, this is my friend Barry Crimmins, who passed away, who he influenced. So, yeah, but I used to love going to San Francisco. I used to stay with Jeremy Kramer.
Yes.
And Kevin Meaney was one of my best friends. And I loved that scene. It was very similar to Boston in that the comics kind of ran the situation.
They just showed up. They weren't necessarily scheduled. But here's my question to you, and I will put Alex in this category as well. A lot of comics, and I don't see you as this person, are very introverted and somewhat dark and even a little bit shy when they're not on stage, and that's their place to have that other side come out. True or false?
Yes, and I'm not a really social person. I don't like going to parties. I'm very, very uncomfortable in group situations where I'm not on stage talking to people. Uh-huh. I don't think I'm dark at all. I know a lot of guys who are, but I'm not. But I'm not a tremendously... I can be outgoing, but I'd rather be alone. I just spent 2 weeks on Cape Cod by myself, and it was glorious. I don't think I talked to five people in 2 weeks.
And what does your family say when you go to Cape Cod?
Well, my wife Jean came out for a few days. We have a small, my wife calls it a clam shack. We have a small house there.
I
like to go back occasionally just so it's not empty for 6 months at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm writing, so I can write there. And I love that area. I just like being, I'm from there, so I love going back.
So I got to read this as an intro. People locally know you. And I just found out something on Facebook that I didn't know either. But this is what I got to bring Jack up to the other day at a fundraiser. Jack Gallagher is a nationally known comic who has appeared at clubs, colleges, and corporate events around the country. In addition, we have to talk about this, he appeared in concert as an opening act for Tony Bennett, Dolly Parton, and The Temptations. Jack has made several appearances on The Tonight Show with both Johnny Carson and Jay Leno and Late Night with Conan O'Brien. Jack can currently be seen as the co-host of the syndicated PBS series Money Track. We're not going to have any time left.
It's okay. I like hearing what I've done.
Yeah. Let me tell you more about yourself. He's also received 3 Emmy Awards, written 7 critically acclaimed one-man shows, and in your a recurring role on the HBO series Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yeah.
So what do you like better, live or TV/movies?
I like both. I don't do as much stand-up as I used to. Mm-hmm. I spent 15 years on the road, averaging between 30 and 35 weeks a year for 15 years. So I've kind of had it with that. And as I get older, I find that my demographic is the group that we worked with at the SPCA
who
thing last
week. Who so
weekend.
Enjoyed your kidney stone jokes. You had them rolling
yeah,
in
I mean,
the
well, you know, I'm 65 years old. I'm not going to go to
You look great.
Thanks. But I'm not going to go to, like, the punchline and work for 20-year-olds who are looking at me like, why is my dad on stage complaining about his bad back?
And there were so many truths that, you know, you get up in the morning and you hurt from sleeping. And how wrong is that?
Yeah.
And I have to tell you, 2 years ago, I canceled my probably 15-year-long People magazine subscription for the very reason you pointed out. I don't know anybody anymore.
Look at the cover and go, who are you?
Seriously. It was my favorite. Once a week it would come in the mail and I would so dig on it. It was costing me money because I don't know anybody.
Exactly. And I don't. I like doing stand-up. I would hesitate to say I don't enjoy it as much as I used to, but I like doing it. I like writing plays, these one-man things that I do. I don't know. My job is great because I do something different all the time.
Sounds like it.
I don't have to show up. I never really enjoyed being an opening act. That was really hard because nobody cares that you're there. They want to see Tony Bennett.
Move along. Yes,
I used to travel.
Along.
I traveled for a couple of years with the Pointer Sisters.
Oh, my God. Okay.
And they were wonderful, but nobody wants to see you.
You came for the Pointer Sisters.
Well, I came for the money and some exposure.
No,
you
they
know.
Came. People came to
oh,
see
yeah,
the Pointer
exactly,
Sisters.
Exactly. And it's like, and you know what it's like. The lights go down and they say, well, welcome to the Pointer Sisters show, blah, blah, blah.
You
but first,
Pointer Sister.
And you hear, but first, and everybody goes, oh, God, we have to sit through 15 minutes of this.
Money Track, Money for Life. That sounds like a serious grown-up financial show.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, but I don't know anything about money other than how to spend it. But
how's that
I
going
was
so, for
I,
you?
Well, I was the co-host. Uh-huh. I jokingly say I was the eye candy on the show.
Yeah, okay.
I hosted it with a woman who was a stock trader and financial advisor. And I kind of was like the everyman. I would say, okay, well, explain what that is to me. Explain.
Okay.
I learned a lot, but I was, I was just sort of the guy who was like you. People, when they would do research, people would say basically, well, if he understands it, I know I will. So
that works.
Which
that
is fine.
Works.
All the checks cleared.
Tony Bennett, Dolly Parton, The Temptations, who are some of the more unique, interesting, memorable people, and we'll throw Conan and Jay and Johnny in there.
Tony Bennett was my favorite by far, just an amazingly nice person, just a nice man. As the opening act, you're a chum.
Your meat, yeah.
So a lot of them, like Paul Anka, I worked with Paul Anka, I probably did 6 or 7 dates over the course of 10 days with Paul Anka at the tents. You know, in the summer, they set up tents east in the round, and I did that with him. I never met him. He didn't have time to meet me over the course of 10 days.
Wow.
The Pointers were very nice to me. Dolly Parton I worked with, she was very sweet. I had a really weird experience with Dolly Parton, but she was very sweet.
You're not, okay. Shoot.
It's a long story.
Okay, well.
Do we have time?
We have time. We've got, yeah.
Okay.
Go for it.
All right. Okay, so here's basically what happens. As the opening act, you work in front of the curtain, the runner, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I've got like 6 feet of stage. And they traditionally will page you on stage left. Lights go out, black, black, nothing, can't see anything. And a stagehand will take a flashlight, put it on the floor in front of you, and you follow the light to the mic stand. Get to the mic stand, lights come on, boom, I do my 20 minutes. Thank you, everybody, good night. Her band is behind the runner. Her band is behind the curtain getting ready, because as soon as I'm done, she comes out.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as I say good night, they start to vamp, and they're vamping 9 to 5.
Oh,
so
God.
Now, traditionally, you exit stage right. So I look to my right, and there's no light to page me off. And I tell this story in my act sometimes, and I jokingly say, I'm panicking because I'm going to have to start singing 9 to 5 in a minute, and I don't know the first line. So I'm panicking. So I just instinctively look to my left, and I see a light, and I follow the light, and I walked into her.
Oh, God.
I walked into her.
Her. If you could see his hands.
Yeah.
Oh, and she's petite, and yet she's...
Well, I was bent over trying to follow. It's pitch black. You can't see your hand in front of your face. So,
you're
yeah,
in a very
she
small
was
number
very
of
nice.
People who could...
Yeah, she was very sweet. I said, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. And she said, oh, don't you worry about it, sweetie. It's not a big deal. And then her road manager came to my dressing room and just tore me a new one.
Oh, come on.
Oh, he was like up and down and backwards
okay.
and forwards.
Then find me a light and get me.
I said I couldn't find the light. Where's the, you know, so anyway, follow the light, head to the light.
So you also, okay, so you write, you've done one-man shows, you do stand-up, you do television, you do movies. What's this band that you're going to be performing in? And it's kind of dating the podcast, but you have a band. Let's put it that way.
Well, I sing with a band.
So you could have done 9 to 5.
If I had rehearsed. Several years ago, I was writing a play about my son, Liam, who is a person with autism. So I was writing a play about him, and I had some comedy material that I was going to use in the play, but I hadn't tried it out yet. But it wasn't enough for a whole show.
Mm-hmm.
So one of my good friends is Tommy Dunbar, who is in a band called the Rubinews.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, why don't we do some songs? You know how to sing. And I said, well, you know, not really. And he said, yeah, we'll put it. So anyway, he got in touch with Dick Bright from the Bay
right.
Area, right, who everybody
yes.
knows. And Dick Bright put this amazing band together with Tommy Dunbar and Al Chan from the Rubinews, Dick Bright, Kevin Hayes, a drummer who's played with, he was Robert Cray's drummer for 16 years. His brother's Chris Hayes, who was in Huey Lewis.
Yeah.
His sister's Bonnie Hayes, the songwriter.
Oh, my gosh.
So he comes from this magical musical family in the Bay Area and this great keyboardist, Alan Leong. And we rehearsed and did this show where the first half of the show I did stand up, and then the second half, because it wasn't enough for a whole show, the second half I sang covers with the band.
How fun.
And it just developed into this thing that we do every couple of, so this is the 7th one that we'll do. And I have an inordinate amount of like rock and roll knowledge for some reason that doesn't do me any good. So we play these songs. I talk about the music. I tell stories about the songs. I do a little comedy. And then we, you know, this year I'm going to plug it. We're doing it in June 9th
mm-hmm.
at the Sophia, the new B Street.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And we do everything from the Rascals and Edison Lighthouse. You remember their hit?
Yes. Wait.
Love grows where my rosemary grows.
Oh, love grows where my rosemary grows.
So we do everything from the Rascals to that to Grateful Dead, Tom Petty, the band.
How fun.
And it's just a ball. We get people up on stage to sing back up.
Dear. So yeah. Be ready if you show
up. So it's
up.
Fun. I'm going to plug it. We do it June 9th. You can get tickets at swellproductions.com or at the Sophia box office. And yeah, it's just a fun show.
And if you listen to this podcast after the fact, you missed the show and look
yeah,
at it.
Yeah, too bad.
Talk about both of your sons. I have a mm-hmm. friend with an autistic son, and I so enjoy his perspective. And
yeah.
You've alluded to that when I got to hear your work the other day. We had a friend who his face is sort of a puckered grimace, and it's just his opinion. Mm-hmm. And Stephen looks at him and says, you look sad.
Yeah.
Why do you always look so sad? It's like, thank you for saying what other people think. And
yeah. Liam is 22. He's in school. He's very bright. You know, there's so much that people don't know about autism, and there's so much that's happened. He was diagnosed when he was seven, so he was diagnosed 15 years ago. So many things have happened since then. I always refer to him as a person with autism and not being autistic, because if you my personal feeling is if I say he's autistic, then anything he does, it's like, oh my God, he can drive a car. That's so
magical,
great. It's like, but as a person with autism, it's just one aspect of his personality.
Beautiful.
He drives. He drives Lyft. He's very smart, but he thinks in a way that you and I don't think. And he's a couple of things. I was talking to Jean, my wife, about this a while ago. He's never told me a lie. He's left out facts, but he's never told me a lie. And he is the least self-conscious person I know. He doesn't care about the clothes he wears, how his hair is combed or not combed, or he's just his own person. He's what everybody wants to be. He doesn't care what people think about him. He doesn't care what people say about him.
How about that? Just lessons
about
we could all
business.
Learn, right?
Now, his older brother, Declan, who's a wonderful person, is neurotypical. And he has all of the neurotypical problems that we all have in terms of, do you like me? Am I dressed correctly? Is my hair look good?
Yeah.
Liam, on the other hand.
Are they close?
Very. Declan lives in New York. Declan lives in Brooklyn. When we go back to Massachusetts, we all spend the summers back in Massachusetts.
Nice.
Liam will take the train down to New York and spend 3 or 4 days with Dee, and they go sightseeing or go to the movie. Yeah, they're very, very close. They get on each other's nerves like brothers do, but Declan's very protective of Liam. And Liam loves his older brother and sort of looks up to him. And yeah, they talk on the phone a lot and really tight.
So you, and I'll put myself in this category, we're in a kind of a rare club in that I'm pushing 30 years of marriage. And you've been married, what, 38 you mentioned?
It'll be 38 this summer, yeah.
What is your wife and what do your kids say about this career that you have? So like four questions in one. Do you get material from them? I think yes. Do you try stuff on your family, or is that just or do we leave that at the door?
No. I don't think I do that anymore. I used to make my wife really laugh hard when we first met. Now Declan.
Oh, they all make us laugh early on.
I know. And now Declan makes her laugh, and I'll say to her, "You laugh at him like you used to laugh at me."
Right?
But the boys have just always grown up with me doing what I do, so it's not anything special to them. And Jean was the one who talked me into doing it the first time, so I sort of blame her for that. But Declan, for a while, had a hard time, because the first play I wrote was called Letters to Declan, and he had a hard time for a while, because when he was a teenager, people would meet him and say, you're Declan. Oh, and he would say, that, you know, they don't know who I am. They don't know anything about me. So he was not crazy about what I did for a while.
But does he appreciate it now? It's
yeah,
a forever
he's trying
love
to
letter.
Do the same thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he does stand up in New York, and he's got a little web series that he's producing.
Is he good?
I think he's really funny. He just did a small part in a Woody Allen movie that came out last year, a very small part. So yeah, he's trying to do the same thing. Liam is into animation, and they're both kind of creative kids. So people, men now.
I know how that happens.
Oh yeah. I don't know.
Do you remember? You kind of talked about this earlier. Do you remember the first time you went on stage in front of people? Do you remember your first set?
I remember the first time. Well, the first time I went on stage was at the University of Massachusetts, and I was doing jokes about the university. They had a bus. At that time, UMass had the largest fare-free bus system in the world. And I used to drive the bus. I was a bus driver on campus. And I used to do jokes about the different stops and what the kids were like at the door. They lived in this dorm. They were the jocks. They lived here. They were hippies, stuff like that.
And it worked?
Oh, it worked great on campus. Yeah, and it wouldn't work anywhere else. But then when I started doing it in Boston, I had to start writing more, not generic stuff, but more for a wider audience.
And when you travel, having been a big fan of comedy and stand-up for a long time, you kind of have to tailor things to
the
town. You find out all the little cute facts.
Okay, what's the crappy town here?
Yes, yeah.
Rio Linda.
And
okay,
rip on
we'll
them,
talk
right?
to Rio Linda. What's the best place? Rio Linda is the best place you can go.
I love Rio Linda. I have
whatever.
Two more questions. Working with Larry David, what's that like?
Great.
I love that show.
Very good. Love that. I loved that experience. I haven't done it in a while, but it was a great experience. because it's, as you probably know, it's all improv.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So he just gives you a little sheet of paper with a one-sentence description of your scene, and you just go from there.
It's sometimes uncomfortable to watch because
Yeah, but that was great. Uh-huh. I mean, that was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed that. And the guy who plays his manager, Jeff Garland, is one of my closest buddies in the business, one
Life
of my closest friends. Yeah.
So my other question, because this podcast is called NorCal Names, why Sacramento?
I got a job at Channel 3.
That was a long time ago.
I didn't like L.A. We moved from Boston to L.A. I had some success. I did Tonight Show a few times. You can tell how old I am because Carson's dead. But I...
Wow.
Well, that's true, isn't it?
Carson's dead.
And Leno doesn't do the show anymore. I didn't like L.A. It just was... Everybody's in this... It's like D.C. with good-looking people. You know, everybody's in the same business. And I got a job at Channel 3 hosting this show, and we moved up here, and we liked it. And after the show was canceled, I could still do the road and fly out of here. And then we had the boys, and we have a house.
And
we go, you know, we go back and forth to Massachusetts. I try to spend half the year here and half the year on Cape Cod.
Well, in our industry, people come up to me with a voice and say, people say I should be in radio because of my voice. And I'm sure you have people say I'm really funny. Pause. What do you say to them?
Well, a lot of times I'll speak around, you know, like the Rotary or the Elks or whomever might call me and ask me to, and now they just want to know what I'm doing. So I'll say, I'm writing this, blah, blah, blah. And then inevitably someone will come up afterwards and say, you know, I've always wanted to do stand-up. How do I start? And they're like 40 years old. I feel like saying, dude, that ship has sailed. You got to start.
But
I mean, I started late. I say, if you want to do something, go to an open mic night, get on stage. And people always say to me, how do I do it? Get on stage. Unlike any other business, I think, including music, you have to get on stage to do stand-up to see if it works. Because you're in your room thinking, this is the funniest thing I've ever written. And then you put it up. People go, is he speaking Mandarin? What language is that he's speaking? So I try not to be discouraging, but I'm honest and say... I had a guy like 3 years ago say to me, I found this. He was like 45. I found this agent. He's going to get me work. I'm going to run out on the road. And I was like, good. Good luck. Great. Good for you. Not going to happen. It's not happening. I'm 65. Nobody in Hollywood wants to talk to me anymore. They have no desire to talk to me. I know we're running out of time, but I will tell you very quickly when I knew I was getting too old. I had auditioned for a show for Comedy Central. And auditioning... I don't know what it's like in radio, but in television, it's like a four-stage process. You audition for one person, then five people, then 10 people. Then the last step is you go to the network. They call it going to the network.
Mm-hmm.
That's when everybody shows up. 30 people show up, and you audition for them. I did all the auditions. They were great. They loved me. Oh, this is fantastic. A couple of weeks later, I call my agent and say, what happened with that show? And they said, oh, yeah, they're moving forward, but without you. And I said, why? And the quote was, and I've remembered this because it was the defining moment, the people at Comedy Central said to him, get someone who does exactly what Jack does, who's 10 years younger.
Oh, my God.
And at that point, I said, okay, screw it.
I was just
going to
say, screw them.
I'm not going down here anymore. So if the things I have gone down for, like Curb and stuff like that, they call me, which is great. But I don't feel any compulsion at 65 to go down there and do it.
You don't seem very sad.
I'm kind of done. I want to just go to the beach. I want to relax.
Can we not make it another 10, 15 years before we get together and chat?
Yeah.
And we have to just on our own talk about the whole San Francisco thing.
Yeah.
Right?
That was a fun time.
Good stuff. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
See the sky big and beautiful blue. Earthbound. Fallen angels come calling for you. Earthbound. Keeping close to the ground. Think I might stick around. Aretha Franklin, Mary Carr, Earthbound, Walter Cronkite, Seamus Haney, Ringo Starr.